Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. My name is Jeanette Abney, and I want to thank you for joining me here for another episode here at Precious Predicaments Blog Talk Radio. It looks like I'm running into some internet problems or internet connections. I don't know what's going on with this, but we're going to let it do what it do. I'm not going to let this drive me crazy as I'm trying to extend. I can't log on to Facebook. Please check my internet connection and try again. And it's crazy because on my doggone internet with my Facebook, I actually have it where it shouldn't even have that problem. So what I'm going to do is at the same time, I'm not going to even let this get to me. I'm just going to use my cell phone. Now, the month of April is actually Alcohol Awareness Month. And with that being so, this is a time to raise awareness and understanding of alcohol use versus abuse. Now, as you know, my name is Jeanette Abney, and I am a licensed therapist as well as the owner of two different outpatient counseling center, which is the Center for the Treatment of Addiction, and also J.A. Precious, Inc. Now, in my line of work, I do a variety of different things. And one of the things that I actually do is work with individuals who have about substance abuse issues. It's more dealing with drug and alcohol use. And a lot of times individuals struggle with the difference between use versus abuse. I used to tell my clients that when you go to kids' parties sometimes, you will find more alcohol than you will Kool-Aid at a party. And it makes one wonder, is it acceptable? Am I a social drinker? Is my substance use or abuse causing problems? Because it can affect individuals in many areas of their life, whether it's dealing with relationship issues, whether it's dealing with finances, whether an individual has had DUIs, or whether it is dealing with their employment. I am also a substance abuse professional, so I see clients that have gotten in trouble with through the Department of Transportation for drug use or alcohol use or testing positive. Now, I have a caller on the line. Let me log this person on because I'm using so many gadgets and gadgets. Hi, this is Jeanette Abney. Welcome to Precious Predicaments Blog Talk Radio. How are you doing today? Number ended in 22. How are you doing?
Fine. How are you?
I am well. Are you the person that I connected with on Facebook last night?
I am.
You know what? I appreciate you, and I also appreciate your obedience because I saw the posting, and the posting, we talk about sobriety, but with the month of April being Alcohol Awareness Month, a lot of individuals, I would say, kind of minimize the impact that substance use abuse may have on others, including themselves. What made you, I don't know, you did the post. Tell me about the reason why you posted that. What's going on with you?
Two things. My dad was a heavy drinker, and he lost his life by being homeless and not being able to control himself while he was drinking. And I can remember some of the things that my mom would say to me, you know, growing up is don't be like your dad. Don't be like your dad. So it started out as social drinking. In 2016, he lost his life. But in 2008, I lost a very good job working at Mercedes-Benz as a sales professional. And it just started out, you know, casual drinking, going out, trying to relieve some stress after a great month or a tough client or a tough month. You know, we always found any reason to go out and celebrate or to just kind of help us get through. And I ended up getting my first DUI. And then I got another DUI. And so after two DUIs and about $40,000 in damage, just losing out on income, having to pay for classes, having a breathalyzer in my vehicle, it just really became an issue where, I mean, I knew when there were times that I should not have been behind the wheel. But on these two occasions, I felt as if I was still in control, and I just got caught with my hand in the cookie jar. So at that particular point, it made me mad enough by losing out on money, by tapping my pockets, right, for about $40,000. It made me mad enough to say, you know what, every area of my life is fine, except for I have two DUIs, and it's quite embarrassing at this moment. So it just put me in a space where I was like, okay, I need to make a executive decision, so to speak. And my decision was to quit drinking cold turkey. Is Snoop Dogg's post about him stopping smoking, which we found out was, you know, just a publicity stunt for a smokeless fire pit that still didn't do anything. But on that day, I said, you know what? I think I want to stop smoking. And it was something that had already been on my mind for a while. And with, you know, I want to say his post about quitting just kind of spurred me to actually, you know what, all right. So on my 52nd birthday, November 18th was my last day smoking weed.
And I want to chime in, and I want to say this, because in addition to being a therapist, I work with individuals from all walks of life. Not only am I a therapist, I own an outpatient counseling program. And prior to doing that, I used to work at Orange County Healthcare Agency doing assessment and evaluation for nonviolent drug offenders. And doing this evaluation would place them in programs for Prop 36. At different levels. Now, a lot of individuals may start off as social drinkers because they think it's a rite of passage. Everybody's doing it. Now, people used to ask me, because I grew up in Compton, and they used to say, Jeanette, how you own rehab and you ain't never did drugs? Because I was scared of drugs. To say, I've never seen a drunk win a fight. So I don't want to be under the influence of alcohol and somebody come and suck me inside my head for something I did to them when I was a teenager. I ain't trying to do like that. I say I never smoke marijuana because I eat too much. I'm looking at my breakfast on Facebook Live. I'm like, oh, Lord, I'm not this big. But I probably would weigh 400 pounds. I got a mess all over the place. I tell people I can tweet whenever I want to, and I can go to sleep whenever I want to, so I don't need no heroin. So drugs has never been my thing, but I grew up in a family where many individuals, I witnessed drug and alcohol use, and I just did not like it. I didn't like it. And they, what you don't defeat, you will repeat. But I realized my husband was alcoholic, like your mother, like you did with you, with my son. I told my son, his father was an alcoholic and had a mental health issue, which we don't really pay attention to how alcohol use and mental health can go hand in hand, like what came first, chicken or egg. So I was surrounded by it. So what I would do was I would pop my mother's alcohol, put water in the bottle, watch her drink Tanqueray and lime juice, and all she's drinking is water and lime juice, or she'd be mad at me. People be smoking weed. I turn the fan and blow the weed all over the house. I was that child. I realized it didn't help. And I just learned about something recently, because we know that we've learned through research that we talk about codependency. Codependency started with growing up in an alcoholic family. And what you do is you try to make them happy, make you happy. And my mother was an alcoholic. And she was mean with sober. When she was sober, I used to be like, at the age of two, let me go buy you a beer. But something wrong with you. But I didn't understand.
Let's calm you down.
Yeah, let me find you something, a man, a beer, or something. You know, but I didn't understand. I didn't get it at the time. And so, but she was a functioning alcoholic. And she went to work, DUI, but it was, she was self-medicating. And because of the depression, she would drink. And I remember hearing her stories, telling stories like, well, at least I had the type of mama that throw beer cans at my kids, because her mother apparently was drunk. And I know my mother would drink Coke 45, and my grandmother would slit small liquor beer. So I grew up in that environment. and I couldn't stand it. But I learned something the other day about toxic independence. Sometimes we become an identified child when we are in that situation because we start taking up and taking care of our siblings, our parents. You know, we learn and we develop certain character traits from being in an environment. And it's not that our parents thought that they were doing anything wrong, but I remember the days when the parents was partying, alcohol was all over the place, all the kids in one room, and you got a kid sneaking the alcohol from the party into the room with the kids in the room. So kids was having their own party. Parents didn't even know.
You know.
People are jail for that now.
I recently witnessed something at a baby shower, and it was a young minor, right? I have to say this minor had to be 14 years old. But they were there with their parents, and their parents kind of allowed the behavior. And what I saw was, it saddened my heart, actually, because I knew this, you know, individual, and I had seen her before. And the only thing that I could think of is somebody's going to take advantage of this young girl, you know, maybe not, you know, while they're with their parents. But why would their parents allow such a behavior? And I guess it's just, like you said, when you come from an environment and the environment kind of gives an okay or a pass to one situation, one thing leads to another. And, you know, the next thing you know, you have someone in a situation where they're potentially behind the wheel and causes some type of bodily harm or damage by a behavior that was okayed at the parent level.
I hear what you're saying in regards to it could have been prevented. I want to share that there is alcohol awareness month during the month of April is that most cases of domestic violence occur under the when one is under the influence of alcohol or drugs. Meaning, I know in my family, when somebody got drunk, somebody will get cussed out. It's gonna be a fight. It's gonna be an issue. Okay, and most things. Call it alcohol related. What makes it domestic is the relationship. The violence is verbal abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, financial abuse. I mean, alcohol use and abuse can play a role in that. Not only with domestic violence, but also in child abuse. Most child abuse incidents also occur when a family member is under the influence of alcohol, especially sexual abuse. So when you were saying what you were saying, that is true. So when you take substance or alcohol use or mental health, sometimes we could be putting our kids in the lion's den and don't even realize it. But if you know grandpa got an issue with alcohol and grandpa ain't getting up from grandma and here comes this little five-year-old, that could be a problem.
We could very well be putting ourselves in precarious situations just by our social environment.
Correct. Also with alcohol is pregnancy. Alcohol can do a lot to the body as far as the brain, the heart, the pancreas, the becoming infertile. It does a lot. I hear people say, oh, well, I would never put no poison in my body. What you think alcohol is? See, I'm much older. You're talking about your father, and because I'm kind of close to the 60s. I call it my almost 60. But I remember when we had Bacardi. People were drinking ENJ, Bacardi. People naming their kids after different alcoholic beverages. But when they did Bacardi 5-1, and now we got, like, the little Mickeys. I used to watch my husband drink a Mickey. I will swear he was crazy after drinking that Mickey. We had Cisco. That is nothing but liquid poison, liquid crack. It was tearing people up. Next we got Four Locos. We got Hurricanes. We got Who want to put that stuff in their body? But we're not aware often of the damage because we think nothing is going to happen to us. That's not true. That is so not true. And even with the DUIs, driving under the influence of a controlled substance, when individuals are away, are they out, they're having dinner with people, they're at parties, I don't know what makes them think they're going to make it at home. Most incidents happen within a mile of your home, and the thing is with a DUI, in most cases, the drunk driver survives. Other people die.
You're right.
A lot of incidents and accidents occur leaving casinos. There's been so many people leaving casinos drunk in the middle of the night and wind up in an accident. And the first thing is, I ain't going to never get no more DUIs and wind up in trouble again. Because they don't address the issue. They don't address
it. I'm that guy. I am that guy. You know, that you mentioned that, I watched a video recently of a young lady who had struck a pedestrian on her way home from a party. And so she was being booked by the police, and she still had not come to the realization that she didn't struck not but one, but struck two people, and both were deceased. And she was still just, you know, kind of laughing and kind of talking about that she was getting ready to take her finals and getting ready to graduate, and she wanted to go party, and her parents are going to take her to Vegas, and she couldn't wait there to have a drink. And I was like, it was just sad to see that, you know, she hadn't even sobered up enough to realize that two people were deceased by being hit by her vehicle, and that she would probably never see the light of day again. And then just the final thing was she was sentenced to 14 years.
Well, they showed mercy on her.
Right. But it just ruins lives. And you said one key thing, and that is self-medicating. As we are trying to cope with whatever traumas that may have happened in our life, may have happened at our workplace, may have happened in a relationship, maybe with a baby mother or a baby father, we are just trying to get through. And I guess the help isn't really readily available. And then a lot of us don't want to admit that we actually need help.
Correct. There you go. Let me say this. The help is there, but it's navigating the help. Most people don't get help until they get in trouble and they feel forced. And then they upset because they think the courts want my money and da-da-da-da-da and all these folks are. And one of the things, like I said, because I'm the owner of two outpatient counseling centers, I'm also a staff professional. I do the staff assessment for the Department of Transportation, and I even have individuals that work at through TSA, and they violate their policy by getting an outside DUI. And I've seen people lose some good jobs over drug and alcohol use, especially alcohol. You know, and some jobs. Some jobs promote it. They go to happy hours. I don't see nothing happy about happy hours except the discount on the food. And once you reach a certain weight, you need to be careful with that.
Most definitely.
$5, that's the only thing I like about happy hours is I get a discount on the food. But the point that I'm I'm making with this is when we talk about when people cross over between use versus abuse. You brought up something about in college. You got binge drinking. You got hazing. You got some individuals that have died in college from alcohol poisoning. You don't send your kids to college to party school. You send them to college to go get an education. And your child don't even make it through college because they get around amongst of other kids that are young adults and they want to have fun. No. Let's talk about women that are pregnant and drinking during their pregnancy. Not realizing that they can cause alcohol fetal syndrome when the child is born, or they can have defects They can suffer from ADHD. There's a lot of different things. And not only, even after the child is born, the stress that we put our kids under by the use of alcohol. My mother didn't know that she was impacting her children with her alcohol use, because in her mind, as long as I keep a roof over your head, food in your belly, clothes on your back, I'm doing my job. But it's very difficult to give individuals the emotional support that is required when you're under the influence of alcohol. Because you
Most
may be part of a
relationship,
because alcohol have a lot of different spirits. A lot of spirits. You got the
happy you said the key word. Yeah, that's the key word, the spirits.
Them spirits in that bottle, them spirits are no joke. So tell me, first of all, and I want to say this, as we talk about alcohol awareness, the age of first use is very important. How long you've been using, what you drink, all of that. People can be an alcoholic drinking beer. See, people think, well, I'm not a wino. No, if it causes a disruption in your life, that will take you towards addiction. When you use despite the consequences, people are so afraid of the word addict. Your mind starts craving it. Now,
I can't wait to get off work so I can go have a drink.
Man, you indicated you can't cold turkey.
I
remember
I can't wait till your service is over so I can go smoke.
I go get a drink. I need a drink. My grandmother used to have a friend. Mm-hmm. I think his name was Stonewall. He used to say, I drank today. He was like, you can say anything. Any reason you want to drink, you know. But I remember with my son growing up and my son having an alcoholic father, I didn't realize the seriousness of addiction at the time. I really didn't, because it was a part of my environment. But my son was in school. And my son came home from school and said, this teacher getting on my nerves. He's trying to make me learn my ABCs. I need a drink. And opened up the refrigerator was something to drink. I'm like, what the hell? You're four. But he had developed that mentality. And now that he's nine, that's an alcoholic, and have done some crazy stuff, it takes me back to when he was 4 years old. But he told me that my mother gave him alcohol when he was two. I never knew that.
You know,
so they created this beast, and then I got stuck with it. I remember getting into an argument or a situation with my father on my son's 16th birthday. I saw him giving my son two cans of Coke 45. I went off. Because we go generational curse. But now, the sneaking he was doing, now he, as a father, got a pretty much, I'm not going to say monitor, but his kids are susceptible to addiction. We don't realize that.
Most definitely.
The
apple doesn't fall too far from the tree.
No, and I'm going to tell you one of the things that was my pet peeve growing up in Compton. When you had parents getting drunk and partying with your kids, to me, I'm not judging anybody, but to me, that's disrespectful and it's a red flag. You start that, you don't want to open up that beast, because that beast will get out of control. Now, you indicated that you quit cold turkey. I want to say this because I have indicated that I will be providing information about different treatment modalities. Sometimes that's dangerous. How does that work for you, though, cold turkey? Because that don't work for everybody. Because some people can have seizures and not.
The alcohol wasn't so bad. But stopping from smoking weed cold turkey was, I got to say, I'm still dealing with the aftermath of that. In some instances, I feel like I'm getting my creative juices back flowing. But in other instances, I feel like almost every night I'm having some type of a drink. So it's almost feels like I'm not in control of my mind. I'm in control of my mind. Right? I made the decision to stop. And I made the decision to not reengage. However, when I'm sleeping and I'm at a rest state, even if it's 20 minutes, I can have a dream. Even if it's a 10-minute nap, I can have a dream in that 10 minutes. And that has been for the better part of 6 months, and I could almost say it's almost every night.
I'm still dealing with the effects of that. I tell people resist, refuse, and be consistent. Some individuals don't feel that they have a problem drinking. They don't feel that they're problematic. And some individuals will isolate themselves, or they feel that that's the way that they reward themselves. But I tell individuals, before you stop, or you're considering stop, or you're contemplating change, you have to do it for yourself. You can't do it for somebody else. You can't do it because they gave you an ultimatum. You have to stop because that's what you want to do. But I do say refuse and consistent, and get a physical. You want to get some blood work done. You want to find out if there's any damage done. Because, like I said, addiction is not only physical with your body craving it, it's also psychological, your mind. Like you say, the dreams, the fantasies, all of that occurs. That stuff is real. And you also have to be aware of your triggers, whether your triggers are external triggers or internal triggers. And if the internal trigger mental health issue, you have to first address also the mental health issue. If not, the substance use is not going to stop because that's self-medicating. Even if loneliness, it don't even have to be a mental health issue. It could be a loneliness. Oh, he teasing me with Popeyes. You know big girl likes the Popeyes.
We started on no Popeyes.
And you're going to come here and talk about, you want some Popeyes? I was craving Popeyes the other day, and I stopped at Popeyes to get you some Popeyes. What's your second choice besides Popeyes? Because you want chicken.
Popeyes.
Popeyes and Popeyes. Okay. Give me a two-piece from Popeyes with some red beans and rice. And, a two-piece of red beans and rice. Legs and thighs. Okay, thank you. See how people try to feed into your addiction? Lord knows I don't need no more.
Look at that.
MK. You want some Popeyes? Yeah, I want some Popeyes. I was craving Popeyes on Sunday. Saturday. Saturday I was craving Popeyes. And I told my daughter, I'll never get what I want when I go to Popeyes and Thompson. So I wanted a chicken sandwich, but now I get the two-piece. Okay. So when we talk about these different things, so I don't want a person to think that I can just stop, because there are lies that we do tell ourselves. But people use the celebrate, people use the drink, the grieve. People use for a lot of different reasons. I have friends of people that I know that have died from alcoholism and the different stages. There's stages of alcoholism. Now, when we talk about that, and even with the death, they got to the point where it's like, I'm not going to drink no more. This is my last drink. I'm going into rehab. And the next morning, they did not wake up because they were binge drinking. And that's sad. That is very sad. But when you are dealing with, and I've been to several funerals, but when you go to a funeral of an alcoholic or a wino, they got to look. They stick together. Tell me a little bit about that, and then I am going to give some information regarding different treatment modalities. But tell me what that was like for you to have somebody close to you to die from the disease of alcoholism, because people don't believe that that's real.
Well, it's multifold. I want to tap into this, go back to that. Financial literacy. I created a financial literacy company because I feel like as a people, if we know better, we can do better. And a lot of us are suffering because we had some money, we lost some money, we had some more money, we lost some more money. We can't figure out where this hole in our pocket is coming from. And that sends us back to our comfort zone. And our comfort zone is video games. Our comfort zone is strip clubs. Our comfort zone is social drinking. Our comfort zone is our smoking group, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so losing my dad, I had about $50,000 in my pocket. And I couldn't save him. He still died homeless underneath a bridge in Los Angeles, underneath the freeway.
Mm.
And with that, right before he passed, it was him telling everyone he had this money. A lot of people coming out of the woodwork saying, you owe me from 30, 40 years ago. You never paid me back. And, you know, within, I want to say, 9 months, we were down to about $6,000, where I had to just say, Dad, we don't have it anymore. Because I saw that it was just going to run out.
Mm-hmm.
It was just going to, and it ran out anyway. But he just wasn't going to stop. You know,
mm-hmm.
And then he would get drunk. I remember one of the last times I actually saw him. There was a McDonald's on King and Figueroa. And we would meet there. And I had no idea where he was coming from, but he would make his way from his makeshift home underneath the freeway. And he stumbled in out of the darkness one day, and we had a conversation in the car. And I taped the conversation for some odd reason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but we sat and we talked, and there were some things that he said. He said, look at you. You're just keen. You notice your surroundings. You're looking in all of your mirrors. And I love that about you. And then he said, I have a challenge for you. He said, I'm in the law books as the United States of America versus Raymond Coleman.
Mm.
He said, my challenge to you is to do something just as great for good.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to make history for good.
Mm-hmm.
And not for being bad. I want you to be a better man than I am. And I really
mm-hmm.
took that to heart. And I was really, really sad. It's so funny, I just finished talking about this in a previous conversation. I was sad because I didn't choose my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't allowed to grieve properly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In trying to talk about, you know, my feelings, you know, my thoughts. The only person I could relate that to was my mom, but my dad was abusive to my mom,
mm-hmm.
which made her put her in a situation where he doesn't deserve your pity.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't deserve your sorrow. He deserves what he's got. And that broke me.
So let me just say this.
Go ahead.
Her pain is different from your pain. She knew him as when she had a child by. You knew him as your father. But what was missing, and I honor you, I appreciate your strength. And I kind of picked up on that just on Facebook when I was reading some of the posts. And I was like, you know what? I'm talking about that tomorrow. Because I didn't even know what I was going to talk about until I went on my computer and I saw the first email. It was Alcohol Awareness Month. I said, dang it, I haven't did a podcast this whole month. And I normally come on twice a week, but I just have not been in a mood. But part of that is because just like you, my podcast is designed, the name Precious was my mother's nickname. And my mother's been deceased 16 years. And that's my way of keeping memory alive by talking about a lot of these things, because that's how you heal and that's how you grow and that's how you help other people get through what you're going through. Now, just like you talked about, and I'm gonna need to write your number down too, because I'm going to have you come back to help educate individuals, because these are things that we are unaware of when you talk about financial literacy. See, our parents cannot or could not teach us what they did not know. Growing up in Compton, money and stuff in Compton, but we were ghetto rich. I don't know how my mama made a dollar. But by that same token, we got to learn how to do better. Part of what was missing, and it's not an excuse, but your father also struggled with mental health issues. I don't know exactly what his diagnosis may have been. It could have been manic depressive. It could have been schizophrenic.
We had that conversation. It's paranoid schizophrenic.
Because I grew up on the mental health.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted more for you that he could not give you or your mother.
Most definitely.
And so he went into his comfort zone, but he made an investment in you. And that investment in you is what he wants to see, or he knows the world can benefit from. And that right there is blessing. You know, my son used to tell me, well, you can't pick and choose your parents. No, you can't pick and choose your parents or your family, but you can pick and choose who you associate yourself with.
That part.
So the grief part, we go through different stages. We go through the denial. We go through the anger, which is huge. We go through the bargaining. We go through the guilt. We go through the hope. I tried everything in my power to save my mama. Everything. It got to the point to when she started going through rigor mortis was sitting in her body. I was feeding her baby food to try to get her to eat. Anything I could. But I could not change her. I couldn't. She didn't want to do the chemo. She didn't want to. She was so hard-headed and resistant. She didn't want to stop drinking. My mother would leave the doctor's office, the oncologist's office, and go to Red Lobster and have a strawberry daiquiri.
No, my dad was the same way. He didn't want to stop.
No, my mother didn't either.
He didn't want to stop. And he would just call it. I'm not drinking anything major. I've had a few beers. That was his words. I had a few beers. And the few beers would just, because he was dealing with issues and self-medicating, the few beers would just take him over the top. He would be over the top. I remember he called me one day and was trying to get some money, and I wouldn't give it to him, and he snapped on me. And it was just like it took me all the way back to childhood. He said, one of us is leaving here in a suit. And I said,
oh, wow.
I said,
that's a threat.
Wow.
That's a threat.
Wow.
Well, you know what? That's the mentality. Joanne just wrote, my aunt didn't stop, didn't want to stop either. A lot of people don't, because the thing is this. They don't know how to stop. My mother was drinking and started drinking, I think, at the age of 12, where she would sneak and drink after my mother. So the earlier the onset, the harder it is to stop, and it causes so much damage to your body as well as your brain. So, and some people, if they stop, they can have a seizure and die. Now, I said I wanted to talk about the different treatment modalities. I always tell individuals to first get a physical to find out if there's any damage done to the body. There's two different types of detox. We have what's called a medical model detox. A medical model detox is where individuals go into rehab and they are administered medication to help them with the anxiety, depression, or whatever symptoms they may have, because they can't do it cold turkey. Then you have what's called social model. A social model detox can be anywhere from 3, 7, 10 days detox, but you're doing it cold turkey, but you're still being monitored. Then you have what's called residential. And residential treatment, it could be a 30-day, 90-day residential treatment center where they isolate you from external things so you can focus on nothing but yourself. Now, some of the people say, I can't afford it. They have what's called drug Medi-Cal program. They have free programs out there that's funded by the state. So there are ways of getting help if you want the help. But some individuals can't go through the deep. Man, it's like a fish out of water. They don't know what to do. Then from the residential, let me finish this and then I'll hear what you got to say. From the residential, we have intensive outpatients or IOP, which then a person can go 5 days a week for IOP. Then you have regular outpatient. Some individuals may choose to just go to NA meetings or AA meetings. And some individuals don't like AA because they think it's more spiritual-based, but they talk about the 12-step philosophy. Now, that may have changed some people's lives, especially if you have a sponsor to hold you accountable. But AA is where the treatment support. And then you have what's called Celebrate Recovery. Now, I've only been to one AA meeting in my life and one Celebrate Recovery meeting in my life. I have an addictive personality, but I don't have an addiction to alcohol or drugs. Now, with Celebrate Recovery, what I like about them is they talk about hurt, habit, hang-up. Who hurt you? What is your habit? And why you struggle with hanging it up? When I went to one of those meetings, I could gain a better concept of that philosophy versus step one, my life is unmanageable, step two. You know, so part of that is being honest and open. Now, what was you about to say?
I lost my train of thought.
What year did you say your father passed away again?
2016.
Okay, so he passed away in 2016. How would you say that his passing away has changed your life?
Well, I will say this. What people don't necessarily want to change and won't change until they are angry. Mm-hmm. And being that I was angry at the fact that I lost my dad, that I didn't know what to do with the money that I had in my pocket, and I couldn't change it fast enough to prevent his demise, I think that is exact. The anger is what made me want to change. It made me want to get educated. It made me want to see a different path for myself, to be an example, you know, against all odds, for my children, my son and my daughter, for, you know, my family members, brothers, sisters. I have a brother that suffers from mental health as well. And I can see where he is at a space where now he's self-medicating with alcohol. Having a drink here and having a drink there, and being that I've already went down this road already, you know, being the eldest, you know, of all my siblings.
Being the oldest sucks. I am the oldest, and it's a lot of responsibility.
It's a lot of unnecessary pressure.
Yep, and it seems like you carry the whole family on your weight, on your shoulder. And the thing is, when we start talking about that, like you said, the anger can force you to do something negative, or anger can force you to do something positive. Because anger is I like talking about the anger iceberg. The anger is the behavior that we normally see exhibited. It's what's up under the anger, which is the disappointment, the feeling betrayed, the feeling the injustice, the under the anger. It was years before I learned that what my anger was about and what was fueling it was my disappointment of my parents. But you can't give what you don't have, and you can't teach what you don't know. A lot of individuals stay ignorant because they are afraid. That's all they know. My mother and father didn't want to come out of their comfort zone. So I had to accept that. If they didn't want to do better, that don't mean I don't have to do better, because I know better. Know better. And then I try to be a better example for my children, for my grandchildren, but I kept noticing that I kept attracting the same type of people. I kept putting myself in the type of just last week, I was at the casino, and this lady kept saying, "You want a drink? You want a drink?" I'm like, "I don't drink." I stayed up till 5 in the morning pretty much being somebody else's bodyguard because I was concerned about her behavior while under the influence of alcohol. I don't know her like that. Mm-hmm. Want to see what happened to her because people don't realize how they put themselves in vulnerable situations when under the influence of alcohol.
Most
and then
definitely.
I'm sitting up somebody by. It's 5 o'clock in the morning. I'm a broke all out and high. My body hurt. I ain't doing that no more. I'm not doing that no more. But I understand how people can get caught up, and I don't like to see people taken advantage of. And that's when we talk about anger, the anger that comes along with this. I don't even want to see it sometimes. Just if you don't want to do nothing about it, and if you don't want to accept no help, I don't have to deal with that. Because I can't make your problem my problem. Now, we talk about alcohol and awareness. Some individuals don't realize how alcohol impacts relationships. A drunk state of mind. It impacts your parenting abilities, your work ethics and abilities. Some people are not able to function. Some people lie, cheat, steal, everything else, kill. That has an impact on your relationship. Now, when you was in your drinking behavior, how do you view it as how it impacted or affected your relationships with others?
You know, I think that I was the life of the party.
Okay.
I was just cheerful and always laughing and trying to make the best out of any situation. But I also noticed that Street Fighter, and it made me want to defend myself, which actually made me weaker because words shouldn't draw you out of character. But some words were triggers, right? Some words just made me want to go upside your head. And I could just feel myself out of character. You know, I could remember being in a space where a couple of shots of Patron and a couple of Coronas and I would be wanting to dance on the tables, right? I can remember one incident. I'm laughing. I went to Atlanta.
I'm saying it because I was just in Compton the other day, and my neighbors was having an event, and I was ready to leave, and my grandson was like, "Granny, let's go down the street." I got to thinking, that's too much drinking for me. I'm not one of just people doing it. And I can't get caught up. I cannot be getting caught up. But my grandson, and he'd be the first one scared when something happened. Because I used to tell my son, "You don't know nothing about that life. You don't know nothing about that life." But my friends, they know that that's not what I do. But they also, I respect them. They respect me. I get it. Situations and some things I don't need to be a part of because I can get caught up in that. I don't want to be hanging out down or hanging out somewhere and somebody come do a drive-by and then you see Jeanette Abney, dead at 11, the owner of the Center for the Treatment of Addiction, been a therapist for 20. No, I can't kick myself. And you've got to be aware of your triggers, your people, places, and things. And my son, I call him a super crip. When he gets drunk, when he's sober, he's mild matter, light, kind. When he's drunk, what's up, cuz? I'll be like, what the hell? Where did monster come from? And then I get paranoid. And I had to tell my son, "You are a trigger for me. I can't be around you like that because I'll be ready to go upside his head." And the last time I had to call the police, my son had the nerve to say, "My mom hit me." Oh, Lord, I said, "This is the first time I didn't hit you. How dare you trying to get me arrested?" But
now, he was saying
drunk. he was so drunk. And then he go tell me, Mom, I'm not drinking no more. I said, why? Because I was in jail and woke up next to my stepdad and don't know how we got there. Yeah, because you were banging on my door and I kept saying, get away from my door. So before I go to jail, I think I need some help from the law, because they need to come and protect and serve me, because I got two drunks knocking at my door that ain't getting in inside of the house, because if I let them get in here, now I got a problem. That I got to take care of them. They don't even know where they are. They don't even know. And then I'm going to look like the bad person. Thank you. And then I'm going to look like the bad person because I got to deal with that. So, thank you. So part of it is educating yourself, understanding addiction and addictive behaviors. I got my Popeyes. So I'm like, okay, I was like 6 more minutes.
No, I don't. Happy time. It's happy hour.
Got my Popeyes. I think he forgot my ranch dressing, but I'll give him a pass on that. I still got my red beans. So, but the thing is this, you got to want it. Rock bottom is different for everybody. I remember as a therapist, I was doing groups, and a person told me his rock bottom was he lost his truck. And I was like, how is a truck on rock bottom? He lost his truck because it was his father's truck. His father had passed again in his truck. And because he lost that, it was like a family heirloom. So that made him realize, I need to stop drinking. I need to do about this. Now, just as we were talking, I'm looking at something, and it talks about alcohol and health. A lot of individuals are not aware of how does alcohol affect health? Because alcohol can lead to many different health problems. It can it can damage organs, psychological processes, and mental and emotional health. Alcohol can also kill. Now, we start talking about the effects. Drinkers suffer. Alcoholism destroys goals and lives. It can shorten the lives of many individuals. It can shorten the lives of by your behavior, by what you do, by the way you live, your lifestyle. Also, families suffer. Drinking can also lead to marital problems, violence in the home, and misery for family and friends. I can't be around no drunk. Society suffers. Alcohol problems are costly, and alcohol is often a factor in crime and violence, loss of work time, and in. But what people feel is alcohol is depressant. If you are already depressed, you don't need no alcohol. What is your take on that alcohol being a depressant?
Well, I think whenever we are, again, dealing with some sort of trauma, we're not happy. Right? You don't associate trauma with happiness, right? When you're dealing with some type of family issues, right, or marital issues or financial issues, right, you're already in a negative state. And if you're in a negative state, you don't need something that's more negative, such as a depressant, right? If anything, you would try to seek something that was on the upper side, right? Whether it is doing something that puts you in a more blissful state, you know, maybe working out, going for a walk, going for a run, doing some shopping.
And the chemicals in your brain, too, like a hormone. So, yeah,
exactly.
I see where you're going with that.
That you need when you're in that state of mind or in that state of being. You want to do something to counter that, just to have balance, because that would just be like you being in quicksand and me tossing you a 5-pound bag of sand. It's just going to send you deeper into the space that you're trying to get out of.
All right, come back. You know what? I want to say this, and I want to touch on this a little bit. Because when we talk about see alcohol being a disease and is characterized by the inability to control the use of alcohol, they classified alcohol as a disease because it's treatable. It doesn't mean that it goes away entirely, but it's treatable. And many people drink for many different reasons. But one of the things that we didn't talk about is some people drink when they get bored. People don't realize they just, whether they're trying to escape things, the stress of life, but alcoholics become addicts to alcohol when they rely on it to function day to day. We know that there could be some genetic factors. It can make some people more vulnerable. Environmental, cultural, and psychological factors may also play a role. Now, some signs of alcoholism, and the most common sign is an uncontrollable or a need to drink. Others include personality changes, denial that alcohol is a problem. Some people have blackouts, concealed drinking, people that are closet drinkers. And you'll find that in the church. Pastors can be a drunk.
Most definitely.
The first lady can be a drunk. But it's in the church, too. You also have physical problems. And what were you about to say?
An idle mind is a devil's playground. And when you're dealing with spirits, right? Spirits, wine, liquor, beer, they kind of go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen the instances where the pastor just so happened to invite me over to his home because he's a tax person, and we're talking about taxes, and there's several bottles of wine underneath the television. Some people just don't see it as a problem. They have a hard time acknowledging that it is a negative and not a positive.
You know, when I was a kid growing up, this is what a turnoff was for me. It was a turnoff for me because I would see my mother leave it and would run into the pastor at the liquor store. He's like, really? As a kid. And I realized the pastor is a man, but daddy. Now, I want to share the alcohol affects behavior, and it can cause this loss of inhibition, meaning some individuals, a little alcohol may make a person more talkative, giddy and loud, but larger amount can cause the person to become intoxicated, disoriented, slow to respond, and more likely to take risks. Alcohol can be self-destructive or cause impulsive urges. It can have difficulties with mood changes, meaning usually the more alcohol consumed, the more tension of feeling anger, jealousy, depression, and people can come, it can also become exaggerated. Psychological disorders, prolonged heavy use of alcohol can lead to inability to handle daily problems. And that's how you find people living up on the fridge, sleeping by the liquor store, people becoming winos, because they can suffer from severe depression, self-imposed isolation from family and friends. It affects the central nervous system. People can have poor vision, loss of coordination, memory loss, loss of sensation, mental, physical disturbances, and brain damage. Now, I know we're running out of time, and I got a 3 o'clock appointment, but I want to thank you for your obedience, and I want to thank you for sharing your story. I truly appreciate you for that. But I wrote your number down. I'm going to call you later on because I want to have you come back on the show and talk a little bit about financial literacy, because a lot of individuals have no clue what that means. We don't know what to do with our finances. We don't know how to develop passive income. We don't know how to save, invest. We don't know what to invest in. We're investing in the wrong things. So I'd like to try to educate, promote, and provide resources to individuals. So I truly appreciate you. Now, in regards to your financial literacy, do you offer a program? Do you work with people one-on-one? What is it that you do in regards to financial literacy?
I have a consulting business where I can consult with individuals and companies alike, because sometimes companies just don't know what to do with a windfall of money that they just came into. So my website, if I can quick plug, is www.lucciiville.net. I'll say that one more time, www.lucciiville.net. as in Victor, I-L-L-E, Lucieville. And this is where money resides. It's mm-hmm. where the money works for you harder than you work for the money. It's just a mindset. It's all mindset. If you change your mindset, you can change your outcome. If you change your outcome, you can definitely change the income.
Well, I am definitely going to be following up with you. I'm glad that I was on Facebook last night going through that, and I saw that post. And you never know what
I'm glad
kind of connection.
I'm glad that you offered me the opportunity to come. I was excited about it all night long, to come and speak with you and other individuals that may be listening to find that there is a way. It may not be as obvious to some, but there is mm-hmm. a way. And mm-hmm. if you're willing, then you can find the way.
That's true. And a lot of people just give up and they want to die. And you know what? I tell them that death is a permanent solution to a temporary issue. It may not feel mm-hmm. good. It's like me going to the gym. I don't want to go to the gym, but I ain't got no choice. I can't keep eating these Popeye's fried chicken. Because my blood gets big. And people was like, hey, why do you have to do the show? Because there's prednisone blowing a sister up. But I'm not in pain.
Ooh.
I can move my hands. If I clap my hands, I can raise my hands.
All right.
Arthritis is kicking my butt. And Popeyes ain't making it no better. I think my client is signing off for their session. So let me get my session going.
Okay.
And I wrote your number down. I am easy to find by, you know, you could, like, Google my name. But I definitely appreciate you logging in and joining me for the show. Okay? You get my office number. Okay, if you go to my Facebook thing or just Google Jeanette Abney, and you'll get it.
Got
but
it.
I'll call
you
later. All right, thank you.
Sounds good.
All right.
Thank you so much. Bye now.
Thank you for joining me here at Precious Predicaments Blog Talk Radio. My 3 o'clock appointment is waiting for me. Again, thank you
Bye
for
now.
Joining me. Until tomorrow, we'll be talking about parenting.